from KQED.
Hey everyone, I'm Emmanuel.
I'm Carly.
And I'm Jamidra.
And we're the hosts of
The Cooler.
This week, we're leaning into our obsession with astrology by talking to the one, the only, Johnny Nicholas.
We're going to talk about why you have Mercury in retrograde all wrong.
And we're also going to talk about the Pluto controversy. That's right, you heard us.
Justice for Pluto. All that and more coming up. So anyone who listens to this podcast, even semi-regularly, knows some of us love astrology. One of us does not.
I'm right here. I know you're talking about me. It's offensive. It's insulting. I'm just going to
hit you.
That would be Carly.
I cannot deny there have been times when you have gone on your flights of fancy about matters astrological, and I've been sitting here poo-pooing them.
Yep.
Well, today
you've been eye-rolling, but meanwhile, you and I are discussing how deep we are in this. So deep that recently, my friend was pregnant, and she was concerned, obviously, about the health of her child, but also, her due date was 2 days before Libra was going to end. She didn't want a Scorpio. She was like, he needs to come out now.
Yes.
And I was with her on that, but we decided to love it, even if he was a Scorpio.
Well, listen, I got a Leo, and I tried to push it into Virgo, but it didn't work out for me.
How did you try?
I tried.
Well, guys, you know, people are capable of evolving my thinking, and for a few reasons, I'm far more understanding of why folks would gravitate towards it. And also, I've learned taking the piss out of what people find important isn't very nice.
Wow. You've learned a lot about yourself.
I have, haven't I?
So, if you didn't know already, we're talking to Johnny Nicholas. She is the word on astrology on the internet. If you are into astrology, you follow her on Instagram. You read her blog all the time. When we told our coworkers that this interview was happening, breathless coworkers appeared as if by magic.
Oh, it was nuts.
In our cube saying, Johnny, really? You got Johnny? Yes, we did get Johnny. And we are about to talk to her about all kinds of things. You're going to want to hear this after the break. Today we are joined by cosmic goddess, Johnny Nicholas. You're probably one of the million readers who flock to her wildly popular astrology blog every month. I know I am. And if you're not, that's about to change. Welcome to the show, Johnny.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Thanks for being here. We're obsessed.
Yes.
To put it mildly.
Wow.
You're like, this is a lot. Calm down, everyone.
You're like, I feel smothered.
We all have our brand, and ours is smothering people with love.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. We need more of that right now.
Right?
Exactly. So a lot of people who heard the intro just now and heard the word astrology probably have their preconceptions of what astrology is pop into their mind. Some people think it's all about that one-size-fits-all horoscope that you find in the back of magazines, or they assume it's frivolous. But your approach is much more centered in social justice and using the stars to facilitate activist action. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we need to first lay a little bit of the land and say that astrology is a tool. And so if we're using it for mass consumption, then it's going to come across in a really kind of generic, watered-down way. If you read your horoscope, that is something that's written for 1/12 of the population. So it's not ever going to be specific. And if it does hit you in a specific way, that's kind of lucky. But if you get your actual astrological chart read, which is a snapshot of the sky when you're first born, it's going to be very specific to you and your life in ways that are kind of unnerving and uncanny if it's done with intelligence and wit and with some humor also. And so that's just one thing, that horoscopes aren't astrology. They're just something that astrologers started to do in order to introduce astrology to the masses. I like to focus on humans. There's no way in which I can look at the patterns of astrology and how they correlate with humans here without looking at structural and systemic oppressions and powers that be, and the ways in which we're interacting with each other based on our location. That's where I usually tend to go in terms of what I'm looking at and how I'm reading things. I want to know, how is it that we're moving towards liberation and healing and also self-awareness?
With that in mind, do you feel that there's maybe been, I don't know, like an appropriation of astrology by folks who hold more privilege?
I think that something like astrology is, we're able to engage with specific types of healing arts if we have the privilege of being able to do so, which is to say, like, we have enough to eat and we have enough education and we have enough of our own, like, needs and necessities taken care of. And then we can kind of think about religion and theology and philosophy and different healing traditions, right? Like, this is a privilege to be able to even have the time and space and awareness and not to be in so much trauma to be able to learn about, you know, other things other than our just our basic human needs. So I think as far as that goes, yes. And I think that a lot of the material for, you know, decades has been written from one kind of person, one or two kind of people. And those only really spoke to the same kinds of people. And so now we're seeing with, you know, the internet and blogs and everybody being able to have their own platform, that there's a lot of different types of people coming to this healing form and all different types of professions. And so we're having different conversations inside of the same system.
Can you explain sort of like the elements of the full astrological chart that you referenced earlier?
Yeah. So when you say something like I'm a Virgo or I'm a Gemini, and then everyone's like, oh, no, not all Geminis. And so to say that your sun was in a certain sign when you were born applies to everyone that was born on that day in history. But every moment the sky shifts a little bit and is completely unique. And so to look at your chart, to look at a snapshot of the sky, the moment you took your first breath is incredibly specific to you.
So it's like an astrological fingerprint, if you will.
Exactly. It's like when the moment we take our first breath, we're taking an imprint of the sky, we might say. And also to remember that these systems are about being in relationship with the way the natural world appears. And for most of human history, most civilizations came up like that. Like, we develop consciousness through looking at how things appeared. We developed language through that. We developed art through that. We developed a lot of our culture through the ways in which the sun was appearing, through the ways in which the light was appearing, through the ways in which the seasons worked, through the ways in which all of that meant for our human life. And so astrology is a continuation of the language of making meaning out of how the natural world is appearing to speak to us.
I think there's this misconception out there that astrology is this misty woo-woo new thing that came up. And the fact that it's been going on for millennia, that people have been looking at the stars to learn more about their lives and ascribing meaning to that, people forget that. And I feel like your work is great in reminding people of the long tradition that is there.
Oh, thank you. It's one of my things.
Yes.
It's not just from the 70s. Really, really, really old.
That should be on the back of your business card. Exactly. It's not just from the 70s.
Not just from the 70s.
So more and more people, especially millennials, are taking on astrology as a way to self-reflect or even as a form of healing therapy. Why do you think our generation in particular is gravitating towards astrology for these things? Do you think it's a response to how much we're inundated by technology and how we feel isolated by that? Or do you think there's something else going on?
I think it's all of those things. I think that there is a need to make meaning out of the massive amounts of completely overwhelming and sometimes totally depressing information that we are inundated with. Never in human history have we known this many bad things happening at once all the time.
Oh,
like,
man.
If you just look at your Twitter timeline, it's like, how do we keep up? I can't even process the mass shooting that happened, you know, 3 weeks ago. I can't process the one that happened last week. Like, the wildfires, like, it's so much. And our systems aren't made to be able to handle this much information. I think that people more and more need somewhere to just touch down and reconnect with themselves, even if it's just for a moment. And I think astrology, especially online, offers a comic relief sometimes. If you're looking at, like, meme accounts or astrological memes, it can be super funny and relatable. B, people need, they want to hear about themselves. Like, you know, across any profession, if you tell people about themselves, they'll be interested. And C, we need to hold the experience that we're having, again, that is really like none other we've had in human history, in a kind of context. And if the astrologer or the rabbi or the social worker or the activist or the artist is holding any bit of that with any kind of conscious awareness, then it becomes a space in which we might feel a moment of reprieve. And like I said, again, a moment of reconnecting with self. And that is really important. We need to stay as close to our humanity as possible in these times, because it's so easy to get caught up in the extremes and the extreme emotions of this time that we seem to be, again, inundated with news that creates those kinds of extreme emotions and therefore burnout. And so how do we stay close to our human connections, our human emotions, our body, ourselves? And so I think if astrology is worked with in an intelligent way, it can help us do that.
Well, working in your profession, you must often encounter skeptics or people who are just outright dismissive of astrology. Mm. And in previous interviews, you've said that that kind of dismissal is what you called a fear of the supernatural, which is just a fear of self. And I was kind of struck by that. And can you say a bit more about what you want people to take from that?
I really want people to find what is healing for them and to go with that. I really couldn't care less if it was astrology. I really just want people to find a place where they, again, feel like they can have a moment of reflection, where their growth is both encouraged and supported, and where we're challenged, but we're not overly taxed. Like, where is all that happy medium going to happen? If astrology is that for you, great. If it isn't, I just want you to find the thing that it is. I think in terms of like having a fear of the supernatural, which is really just having a fear of the natural. Again, astrology is just a observation of the natural world, and the meaning that we've derived from it and studied about it over thousands of years. And if we're completely divorced from the possibility that nature might be speaking to us, that the ways in which nature manifests itself is intelligent at its core, then I think we're running a dangerous kind of game, because we are it. We are the natural world. We are part of everything around us. And for all of creation to be speaking to itself seems fairly logical to me. I think if we look at the patterns of, again, in nature, that everything is impacting the next thing, that we are in relationship with every other living thing here. And so whether or not you want to take it all the way to astrological interpretations of what that means or not, it's just, I think it's really important to stay in the question of, do you think it's possible that nature is communicating with itself? And if so, what might that mean for us? And I think it's like, it's interesting to read things like Carl Jung's experience with astrology, because he also started out as a total skeptic and then investigated it and then became somebody who thought that there was great value in it. And so I think it's great to be skeptical. It's really important to be questioning. I'm skeptical of the things that I do and of the things that I'm skeptical of a lot of things in life. And I think it's really good to be critically minded and to be thinking about things in a really critical and deep and thoughtful way.
Well, I have a question that is going to piggyback off of that skepticism. Now, on this podcast, we have talked a lot about Mercury in retrograde, and it's happening soon. My understanding is it's happening November 16th to December 6th. Correct me if I'm wrong. So can you explain once and for all what exactly that means, like the phrase Mercury in retrograde, and also tips on how us mere mortals can protect ourselves during this time?
Well, I think one of the first things on behalf of all of the astrologers I know, it's Mercury retrograde. So Mercury's not in anything. It's just appearing to go backwards. And so Mercury is the planet of communication. And so it is popular belief that when Mercury appears to station and stop in the sky and then go backwards and then become invisible and then reappear again, that communications go through a kind of underworld experience, which pop culture has really grabbed onto this and made a lot more out of it than it really needs to be made. And so some Mercury retrogrades can be more difficult than others, depending on the actual astrology of the event. And so it might be a time where communication seems to go a little loopy or where you have to review things. And that's really important. I think that we're really forward focused and we're really hung up on progress. And I think what these, you know, nature reminds us of all the time is like, it's really important to also follow the rhythms of life. And so Mercury retrograde might have us reviewing certain ways in which we're communicating, might have us backtracking, might have us not going forward in all areas of our life, but that's not the end of the world.
And you're saying that we shouldn't accept it as an excuse for why a friend has not texted you back.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
not
can we
cool.
just let it go for a second? Really, there's a really beautiful mystical property to it, because Mercury was one of the gods in the Greco-Roman times was thought to be able to go to the upper realms and the lower realms. So it was able to transgress the boundaries. And it was also, Mercury was also the psychopomp, so it helped souls travel from this world to the next. And so there's this very liminal quality. Mercury is a magician. Mercury is related to astrology. So there's something that's really magical in it. And so, yes, Mercury disappears and plays these tricks on us, but it's also like, what is it revealing when things go a little bit amok? It's a trickster quality. And so what is it that we might be able to discover because our plane gets canceled or the call doesn't come through or we get the wrong information? Then what is happening? Like, why can't we be more? My question is, why can't we be more curious? Mercury wants us to, I think, to be curious and to be able to like pick up on what it's putting down. Like, what's the info that's actually happening? It might not be in your schedule, but it's okay. Like, something else is also going on.
So no, read between the lines. I'll do that. I'll do more of that.
Speaking about curiosity, what made me curious about my sexuality was actually a book of Greco-Roman gods. Huh. Mercury was the one that I was like,
yes.
might be into this.
Mercury can get it.
Hermes can get all into this, yeah.
That's right. Mercury is the only planet in the traditional system, I'm talking again a couple thousand years old, that can be either male or female and is both.
Ooh.
And so it represents this trans kind of nature. It's transgender, it's trans diurnal and nocturnal. It moves, it's liminal, it's in between the spaces. And so it teaches us of the third way. And again, if Mercury is retrograde and we're thinking of this kind of liminality, then what else is present? Like, why are we so, you know, hell-bent on having life be one way? What else is Mercury trying to open up to us? What's the third way, possibly?
Emmanuel, just given your Greek heritage, how it's just so perfect that part of your sexual awakening happened from the Pantheon and you looking in a book.
Yeah.
Mercury says you're welcome.
Yes, exactly. So we touched a little bit before on the overwhelming quality of the news. You know, it's a wild and crazy time in the United States right now, and a lot of people are anxious to know what's going to happen. We saw it with this last election. You know, are we going to be okay or not? Now we're looking towards 2020 and just beyond that. Mm-hmm. So is there any insight or feelings that you have based on where everything's going to be in the next couple of years that can tell us whether this darkness is the new normal or if we're about to see some light?
I think what astrology does well is it teaches us about cycles. And cycles don't mean repeating everything verbatim. They mean returning back to something with a new consciousness, more information, and having grown. And the cycle that we have entered as of a year ago is something that the last time we were in it was 84 years ago, which was 1934.
Oh, no. Ooh,
bad year.
And the last time that we were in a similar position as we're having this year with two planets was 1936.
Lord.
And so we're back to, so when astrologers saw this coming, a lot of us were talking about the return of fascism. We have that sentiment already loud and clear. This, I'm not the first person to make that correlation about this time and that. Obviously, all of the symbolism and the ways in which people have gathered and the ways in which 45 has dismissed allegations of being pro-nationalism, even though he might say he's a nationalist, all of that is ringing too close to home and too familiar. And then when we add the layer of astrology on, it feels like more of an urgency to pay attention to. And so it doesn't mean that we're going to be in the same situation. But what it does mean to me is it's an urgent call to action to be very aware of what's happening, to be very vocal of it. And to, again, I'm not the first person to say this, but if you're somebody who said, you know, if I was back in 1930, whatever, I would have done ABC. Well, now it's your time to do that. With no holds bar, without feeling any kind of shame, without feeling any reticence, be proactive in your civic duties. Be a citizen of this world. Be a citizen of this country. Be a neighbor. Be somebody who is actively engaging in what justice looks like here and now, in this moment, and everyone. And we're going into holiday season, and we're going to be with family members. And some of us might even be sitting across from the table of people that voted in what we might feel is against liberty and the pursuit of justice and freedom for all. And so we might start to think, how might we, in subtle, in large, in all the different ways, engage in conversations with each other that are ours to have. Not every conversation is mine to have, but maybe it's yours. And how might we be the one who, in whatever situation we're in whatever way we can, engage with these hard, difficult conversations so that we are not going back to the same situations that we have lived out in human history before, and we know better than to let occur again.
Hmm. So it's a test of, did you learn the lesson? Do you have to do this again?
Yeah.
Say no.
I don't know. It's just that's what's happening in the sky, and that's what's happening on Earth. So my job is just to look at the correlations, and they are oddly, eerily striking a very similar chord with each other.
And I love your call to action, because I think plenty of us look at things that happened in history and we're like, how could they?
Right.
I would have gone to the gates of Auschwitz. Yeah. I would have stopped
it.
Yeah.
I would have been in the French Resistance. Would you?
Well, really?
Well, now's the time. We'll find out.
Well, just hearing you talk about it made me feel alert but calm, because, you know, we have a resistance going, you included, and we are the troops. We will fight against this fascism. Okay, so we're running out of time, so now we're going to do a little lightning round. You can just throw out an answer to a quick little question.
Great.
Okay. The sign most likely to ghost you.
That's not fair.
You're about to lose a 12th of your followership.
That's quite the hit.
It's like, don't tell our secrets.
Okay, well, what I would do, and we don't have time for this, but I would go through every single sign and why that sign would ghost you.
Ooh.
It's all for different reasons.
So we're all trash is what you're saying.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. We all have it in us.
So our podcast has a mix of star signs going on, and I was wondering if you could, you know, just tell us what the vibe is. So Carly is a Capricorn.
Hello.
Jamidra is a Virgo.
Hello.
And I'm a Libra sun, moon, and Venus with a rising Scorpio.
I like how I'm like, I'm just a goat.
Exactly.
That's it.
I have a lot of Libra, and then that Scorpio rising has scared me a lot.
Scared you and or everybody else.
Yeah. People are like, I thought you were so mean, and you're not. And I'm like, it's my Scorpio rising. Yeah. So with that mix of personalities, does anything strike you?
Well, I mean, this is all, again, it's not fair, because I'd rather have your charts. And this is the kind of astrology that I warn against.
This is Cosmo magazine astrology.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, the earth signs are going to do all the work and you're going to be pretty.
I'm basically Vanity Smurf with a mirror over here.
We're just like digging holes in the ground.
I can live with that.
Capricorn's going to be like overly responsible. The Virgo's going to be overly critical. Yeah. The Libra's going to be like, do I look good though? And everyone's going to be like, you're on air. It doesn't matter.
I feel attacked.
I'm going to say that's accurate. I'll go with it.
Oh, man. So we end every episode with a peak and a pit. We usually pick a high from pop culture, a low of pop culture. And I have a topic that I would like to know your opinion on, whether it's a peak or a pit. I know I have my opinions, but you know more about this than I do. So, so in 2006, the International Astronomical Union, a global group of astronomy experts, said, Pluto, we don't know her. She's not a planet. We're not here for that. And so they demoted her. And recently, in September, I believe, there was a new study that said, actually, Pluto has an underground ocean, a multi-layer atmosphere, organic compounds, evidence of ancient lakes and multiple moons. It's more dynamic and alive than Mars. And the only planet that has more complex geology is the Earth. So they're making the argument that Pluto should be reinstated. What is your take?
My take is that Pluto is a modern planet, so it's a body that we've only looked at since it's been discovered, which is really, really, really young in the astrological tradition. And it's something that's really, really obviously far out. And so it has massive impact in my view, and also it's not part of the traditional seven. And so I look at it a little bit differently anyways, and I don't really care what they categorize it as.
That's the most polite I don't really care I've ever heard.
I don't really care. I have my own relationship with it, and I work with it in my own way, and I'm very grateful for it. And I also, you know, bow down because you don't want to mess with Pluto.
She's complex.
The god of the underworld. Yeah.
I mean, ancient lakes. Come on, respect.
Come on. Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah.
Put some respect on Pluto.
Do you have an ancient lake? I thought not.
And then the final thing we do in every episode is one of us picks a song of choice for the week. And we thought we would give it over to you. What is a song that you can't stop listening to that you just love right now?
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry to put you on the spot. When all else fails, you could just say, like, Beyonce or something. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a tie between Cardi B's Money.
Yes.
And Ariana Grande's Thank You Next.
Yes. Ooh.
Yeah,
those have been my two this week. I've really been loving them both.
I think I have an answer. So I just brought up Beyonce. You just brought up Ariana Grande. And I found the perfect mashup of Ariana Grande's Thank You Next with Irreplaceable.
What?
By
Beyonce. My God. That is amazing.
Like when you hear this, you know that scene in Lemonade where she opens the doors and then there's like a flood that comes out?
Oh, yeah.
That's endorphins in your brain when you're going to hear this.
You are such a peacemaker. You should work for the UN.
Guess who else is a peacemaker? All Libras everywhere, just like me. Hey.
I knew that.
So on that note, we're going to go out with Ariana Grande and Beyonce. A little mashup for all of you. Mm. Thank you so much for being with us, Chani.
Thank you, Chani.
Love you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Until next time, follow us on Instagram or Twitter. I'm Excuse My Beauty.
I'm at Teacup in the Bay.
And I'm at Jamija Says.
And remember, you can call our hotline anytime at 415-553-2850. Call us. This episode was edited by me, Emmanuel Hapsis. Shout out to Susie Racho, David Marcus, and Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs. Catch you next week.
Bye. Bye. What I found out.